Welcome to Vermont Edition. I'm Bob Kinzel. Vermont's healthcare exchange, known as Vermont Health Connect, has encountered a number of serious technical problems since it was launched last fall. It's been impossible for small businesses to use the online payment system on the exchange. Some individuals have endured long waiting periods to buy policies, and 15,000 people who bought coverage are unable to go back online to make changes to their initial applications. These are changes that could affect their coverage and the size of their federal subsidy. Now, Vermont is one of roughly 15 states that's chosen to set up its own exchange, and Governor Peter Shumlin says many states are experiencing serious problems.
Let's remember when we have this conversation that there's a reason why Vermont is having a tough time implementing the Affordable Care Act. They're asking us to do something with technology and health insurance that has never been done by the private sector. So to turn to the private sector and say, flick a switch, can you please do this? The answer usually is not any more easily than you can.
Was it a mistake for Vermont to create its own exchange? And should Vermont follow the experience of several other states and turn the operations of the exchange over to the federal government? These are some of the questions we have for our guest today, Lawrence Miller, who is the chief of healthcare reform in the Shumlin administration. Lawrence, great to have you here.
Good to be here.
And you can join the conversation here at Vermont Edition. You can give us a call at 1-800-639-2211. Your thoughts about Vermont Health Connect? Perhaps you have some direct experience. Some people have had a very good experience at Vermont Health Connect. Give us a call and let us know what your experience has been. Was it a mistake for Vermont to set up its own exchange? And Vermont is the only state in the country to mandate that all individuals and small businesses purchase their health care coverage through the exchange. Should this be changed to make this provision voluntary? Your thoughts about Vermont Health Connect? 1-800-639-2211. You can always send us an email at vermontedition@vpr.net. Better yet, give us a call, 1-800-639-2211. Lawrence, before we look at some of the specific problems with the Vermont Healthcare Exchange, I think a number of people are wondering. Vermont to date has spent at least $80 million on its healthcare exchange, and the total price tag is probably going to be closer to $200 million. Vermont, New Hampshire, in contrast, has spent $8 million. Vermont Health Connect has been plagued with technical problems. The New Hampshire model seems to be working pretty well. I think folks are wondering, how is this possible?
Well, I sort of question whether or not the New Hampshire model is working particularly well. As you know, all of the plans that are offered in the New Hampshire exchange have a very limited network, relatively few of the providers in the state are actually in that network. So you've got New Hampshire residents who are having to go a long distance to get care if they're in that system and who don't have coverage if they're out of state that's in network. So these are not fair comparisons in my mind. Their exchange is very limited, as are all the federal exchanges. When I talk to people, as we looked at the question of whether or not we should consider that alternative, Medicaid eligibility determinations in the federal exchange are severely problematic. Delivering Vermont premium assistance through the federal exchange would not be possible. So there are a number of severe limitations to consider if we were to transition to a federal marketplace for Vermont. There's another piece of this that I think is really important to note. About 6 years ago, the Agency of Human Services defined a strategy for replacing the old access system, which is the backbone of the Agency of Human Services. It is the operating system. It is 35 years old in implementation, 40 years old in design. It's in a programming language that hasn't been taught in generations. The people who have to work on it sometimes come out of retirement. It's something that the Center for Medicaid and Medicare said they're not going to continue to fund. We don't have a choice. We have to replace this system. And so the Affordable Care Act did provide 97% funding through the exchange grant to begin that process. So this is not just the exchange. This is the beginning of the transformation of the Agency of Human Services. And it's incredibly important that we get it right.
You know, it's no secret that Governor Peter Shumlin wants to move to a single-payer system, perhaps as early as 2017. And we've heard state officials say that part of the design of the exchange in Vermont, one of the reasons for having Vermont do its own exchange, is to provide a transition process to single-payer. Do you think there was too much of a focus on transitioning to single-payer and not enough emphasis on the care that's needed now?
I don't think those two are completely linked. I think there's a long-term view that having one system that serves everybody is important. But we're designing a transition process that really doesn't have any dependencies on the technology projects at the Agency of Human Services for implementation of Green Mountain Care. We can do universal coverage on its own schedule. That's not tied to these larger projects being done on time. They have a long arc, and they need to be done for their own reasons. They will eventually bring a tremendous amount of efficiency to a universal coverage system, but we're not dependent on it.
You know, even some of the strongest legislative supporters of Vermont's healthcare exchange seem like they're very disappointed with what's going on this summer. Here's Lincoln Representative Mike Fisher at a recent hearing at the State House.
So I need to express in the strongest terms the terms that I hear on the street, that this is a crisis.
Yes.
This is a crisis in our communities.
Is Representative Fisher right? Is this a crisis?
You know, I think I followed up to that with I agree. For the people who are in the change of circumstance queue, it is a very, very challenging situation. We are able to handle cases on a day-to-day basis where there's medical or financial urgency. Been keeping up with those, but the backlog had grown over time. At the time of that hearing, we had over 14,000 people in the change of circumstance queue. Fortunately, since then, the workflow with Optum, who was hired to help reduce that, is kicked in and is starting to be effective. So we've as of a couple of days ago, they managed to put about nearly 3,000 cases into pending closure. There's another few thousand cases that are currently being worked. So the backlog of people who have not been contacted is down to about 8,500 now. So it feels like that's going the right direction. I expect we will be able to get the crisis mode of this behind us really by the end of the month.
You know, I think some people might just have the basic question of why did the state run into so many technical problems? Was this just a project that was so complex in scope that these problems were inevitable, or what happened?
Well, it's a combination of complexity and time frame. So if you go back to the Barry Dunn Lessons Learned report that we commissioned to make sure that we would take from this experience a clear understanding of what went wrong, it cites a number of factors, many of them beyond the state's control. So the implementation schedule that the federal government laid out was really extremely aggressive. It had no room to move. And the requirements that CMS originally laid out were very broad. The notion that there'll be an automated change of circumstance isn't something that the insurance industry does, for example. In most cases, people are able to make a change in the website portal, and then a technician, a clerk at the insurance company will input that into the back end of the system. This design contemplated a fully automated change of circumstance. It just isn't something that's commonly done in the industry. So the complexity was more than it needed to be, frankly, to achieve the business objectives. And because the time schedule was so compressed, it was a real problem to define requirements up front and to really have a well-managed IT project. I think the way the Barry Dunn report put it, there were a number of things that the state could have done better. There were a number of things that the contractor could have done better. But doing all of those things right would not necessarily have assured success, given the scope and the time.
Let's turn to our listeners and talk to Julie in Burlington. Hi, Julie. Welcome to the program.
Hi there. Thanks. So I just wanted to say I'm somebody who works with computers and websites and technology every day. So I consider myself kind of above average in terms of being technologically savvy. Both myself and my partner are now on the exchange. And I have to tell you that I've been very disappointed with the website. First of all, I wholeheartedly support this move, and I can't wait for single payer in the state for a lot of reasons that have already been expressed. But the website, I don't understand how people who are not kind of digital natives or friendly with technology, I can only understand their frustration, because my frustration has been through the roof. And I'd just like to follow up by saying, I wish that the technology worked as well as the people behind the Health Connect, because when I call, and I have called many times with many questions, you know, 90% of the folks that I've spoke with have been awesome. They followed up with me. They've gotten, you know, answered questions, and they've been wonderful. And so maybe I missed this answer, but I was just wondering what, you know, what the timeline is to kind of improve that website and make the website as good as the people.
And Julie, could you tell us, when you said you had a lot of frustrations, what didn't work for you?
Well, the homepage, for one. Even now, so I pay my monthly premium online. It's not obvious, and anybody who knows anything about, you know, interface and usability of websites, it's not obvious when you get to the homepage where you have to click to log in to pay your account. And even once you're in logged into your account, it's not obvious where you actually go to pay your bill. And if it weren't for me, like, doing it 10 times, calling and saying, how do I get to this again, and remembering, I would probably be going through the same frustrating process every time.
Lawrence, what's the state doing to deal with some of Julie's concerns?
So there is a working group that has been looking at all of the little things that would make operating the site a heck of a lot easier for people. And they are, you know, fundamental, like a login button on the front page, like making sure that when something scrolls, that the next button isn't below the screen, that it's actually visible. The challenge for the team, I think, has been prioritizing some critical functionality over the usability improvements. We've asked the director of operations, who's gone in there, to take a second look at what the priority of that ought to be, because yeah, there's many things that if they were easier for people, they probably would not result in a service call, and they would probably not result in an entry error. And so it is, I think, very, very important that we address these before the open enrollment period. It is going to be a question of capacity. But we've gotten a lot of good suggestions, and a lot of those come from the staff who are taking the calls from Vermonters who are saying, yeah, this is what I hear on a regular basis.
So how confident are you that the problems that exist right now, some of them significant problems, how confident are you that they're going to be solved by the start of the open enrollment period? What is that, November 1st, November 15th?
November 15th.
Are you going to make it?
Well, I'm doing two different things. One, we've got the project team going like heck to try and get there. Number two, we've got the operations team saying, all right, if we only have the functionality we have today, how do we make sure we have an absolutely smooth renewal process for people so that they don't have to jump through a lot of hoops, that we're able to do it easily, assuming we are in the situation then that we're in today. And that's going to have our change of circumstance backlog addressed. It's going to have a higher level of workers available for this enrollment period and renewal period. It's going to use the flexibility that the CMS, that the feds have provided for their regulatory requirements since the last open enrollment period. And I think we'll have a much, much better experience in either event. And I really think that's the message I want to get out, is we have some technical problems. We need to move beyond letting those technical problems stand in our way. They shouldn't affect Vermonters.
And you've already decided that small businesses should continue to go directly through the insurance carriers and not bother coming through the exchange.
I decided that months ago. We have an absolute obligation to the customers who are in the exchange today to have a smooth running operation and to make sure that they're well taken care of before we bite off anything else.
Now, Vermont is the only state in the country to mandate that individuals and small businesses go through the exchange to purchase health insurance coverage. Was that a mistake?
I don't think so. I wasn't involved in the conversations about that. I do think that having a set of common products is really important. I mean, Vermont has a regulatory standard for its insurance products that is different than most places. And we did not get a lot of the Affordable Care Act in terms of adding to benefit packages. The ability to identify people who deserve to be in the federal Medicaid program and to pull those dollars into the state has been significant, and it's really been, in those terms, a good success in enrollment terms.
But all those things could have happened under a voluntary system.
All those things could have happened with other enrollment procedures available, and I think that's the true lesson. And remember, small businesses who are going direct to the carriers are still buying within the exchange and exchange products. So the question I think I'm answering is, should we have an exchange and then products that are not exchange products? And I don't think that's true. How people purchase exchange products, you know, that's a different question. I think we should have as much flexibility and a smooth purchasing process. We do need to be able to make sure that people are getting the subsidies they deserve to make sure that they have the most affordable coverage they can. Affordability and universal access to purchase those policies was a critical objective, and I think the legislature was very mindful of that objective when they set out the individual mandate.
I guess what I'm saying is individuals still could have gotten those subsidies had this program been voluntary. They could have chosen to go through the exchange or chosen not to. It would be up to them to decide what kind of subsidy would be available, if a subsidy was available at all. So making it mandatory doesn't really change that, does it?
It presents the choice in a way that it would not necessarily be presented. No other carrier, the carriers cannot provide that federal interconnect. That is the responsibility of the state.
Today on the program, we're looking at the operations of Vermont Health Connect. Your thoughts, 1-800-639-2211. Our guest right now is Lawrence Miller, who is the chief of healthcare reform for the Shumlin administration. Your thoughts about the healthcare exchange, 1-800-639-2211. This is Vermont Edition on VPR. Welcome back to Vermont Edition. I'm Bob Kinzel. Today on the program, we're looking at Vermont Health Connect, the state's healthcare exchange, and the ongoing problems that are taking place at the exchange and what's being done to fix those problems. With us today is Lawrence Miller, who is chief of healthcare reform in the Shumlin administration. And also joining us at this time is Trinka Kerr, who is the director of the Office of the Healthcare Advocate. Trinka, welcome to the program.
Hi, thank you.
Trinka, you're on the front line of the healthcare story here in Vermont, so you're hearing directly from folks about their concerns, their experience with the healthcare exchange. What are you hearing from people?
Well, as you know, my office, the Office of the Healthcare Advocate, is available to all Vermonters, and we help people with health insurance problems and healthcare problems, and we are independent of state government. So we have been hearing from a lot of Vermonters. Our call volume on our hotline has been running about 40% above last year ever since December. And we are hearing about all kinds of problems related to the exchange, mainly the kinds of issues that Lawrence has just mentioned, with the change of circumstance functionality being lacking. We're also hearing about problems with the invoice and payment system. And those are the two main areas. Also, the third area relatively recently was problems for people who had been on Medicaid and had to do their reviews by going through the web portal or calling the Vermont Health Connect call center. And that has proved problematic, and those folks have been reinstated onto Medicaid, and how that process works also needs to be fixed. So there are a number of things that need to be fixed, and we are hearing from Vermonters about all of them.
So do you have the sense that some people are just getting so frustrated by this whole experience that they're just giving up?
Not really. I mean, that may be happening, but the people who call us really want to get their health insurance. They want to be able to use it. Health insurance is really important to a lot of people. So most people don't give up if they have any kind of health care needs.
You were talking about the change of circumstance. Lawrence was telling us a little earlier in the program that the state is whittling that number down. Now, for some people, the change of circumstance could be a change in their income, and that could have a direct impact on their federal subsidies, either a good impact or a bad impact. Are there concerns that some folks are going to have a rude awakening next winter when they file their income tax returns and find out that they owe the federal government money?
Well, I do think that could happen. The reverse could also happen for some people who may get an unexpected refund, and I don't know which way the balance will tip. There will be some who will have to pay more than they expected because the premium tax credit that they got was too large for the amount of income that they eventually got, or vice versa. But I think it could be a shock to some people, yes.
You know, I'm wondering, you probably had some expectations of how this whole rollout was going to go. Has people's reaction and the number of people you're hearing from, are you surprised by it, or is this pretty much what you expected?
Well, we expected to get an increase in the number of calls. We had predicted we would have a 25% increase in our calls, and we've consistently had much more than that, around 40-45% of an increase. And as the problems continue over these last 6, 7, 8 months, I think people are growing less patient and getting angrier about it. So I'm surprised. You know, I wanted it to work. I'm disappointed. I'm discouraged. I'm really hopeful that these major problems will get fixed within the next month or so, and they definitely have to be fixed before open enrollment begins November 15th.
And when you say those problems, what are the biggest problems that you think that Lawrence and his team need to address right now?
Well, I think the change of circumstance functionality needs to be fixed, and the problems with invoices and the payment system, because we hear from people that haven't gotten invoices, who have been paying. Some people are confused and pay incorrectly directly to the carriers, and that's caused some confusion. And some people have paid, and there has been hard for the system to find where their checks or their payments actually ended up. So that whole process also has to be worked out.
Let's go back to our callers and talk to Polly in Sandgate. Hi, Polly. Welcome to the program.
Thank you. I was calling in because I have been working part-time and as a consultant since I had my son 4 years ago, and we've been paying $420 a month for what I considered to be fairly catastrophic insurance. We pay we had a high deductible, but then once that deductible was met, they would cover the bills that we would have if we had a car accident or something. And because I now have to buy it through the health exchange and we don't quite qualify for a subsidy, we're now paying $650 a month for the same high deductible, but they'll only cover half of the bills that come in once that deductible is met. So we're paying half again as much for half the coverage we used to be able to get.
And, Lawrence, we've had calls like this every time we do a show about Vermont Health Connect. Someone calls in just like Polly and says, you know, I've got high deductibles. Even worse are the out-of-pocket caps, which give them much more financial exposure. What about those concerns?
I have talked to a number of people who have the question of what policies were available before the exchange and what policies are available now and the mapping of those and the pricing of those. And what's become clear to me is that I don't understand the pricing of insurance policies. really, the Green Mountain Care Board has the responsibility for overseeing rate review now, and I'd really just have to defer to them. It's in terms of what went into the decisions on individual policies by different carriers as to what the price would be amended to be is in their bailiwick, not in mine. But there's a lot of different variables that go into that, including the actuarial experience rating of that individual policy group.
Trinka, are you getting complaints about that?
Yes, we do. We do hear some from people that they are paying more now for less coverage, but more often we actually hear from people who are really happy with the amount of subsidy they're getting and the degree of cost sharing that they're not having to experience. So we're mostly hearing the other direction regarding that. The problems we're hearing more about are the operational issues, but there are people that fall into that situation who are paying more, and it tends to happen more with families, I think.
Let's go back to our callers and talk to Betsy, who's calling from Springfield. Hi, Betsy. What's on your mind today?
Well, I'm a self-employed consultant, and I've been buying my insurance directly from Blue Cross Blue Shield with no problems for 15 years. And I asked the Vermont Health Exchange for one thing, a paper statement. Because, like the previous caller, it is almost impossible to find the statement online and then send it out. And they're unable to provide that. After I wait on hold for a long time, they say, we can send you a statement for this month, but they're unable to provide a statement. I was a supporter of Obamacare until I had to buy my insurance through the health exchange. And now, and I want to say one other thing, I think it's an unconscionable amount of money that has been wasted on this exchange that could have gone directly to health care. And comparing it to New Hampshire and saying, well, their problem is a limited network, that has nothing to do with their exchange. That was Anthem's issue.
Betsy, thanks very much for your phone call. Lawrence, we had two members of the Vermont House, Dorset Representative Patty Comline and Heidi Sherman of Stowe, say, hey, you're letting small businesses bypass the exchange, and you just told us earlier in the program that's going to be in place for at least another year. And Representatives Comline and Sherman are saying, well, let's let people like Betsy, if she wants to bypass the exchange and buy her insurance coverage directly from Blue Cross or MVP or Cigna, she should be allowed to do that. What are your thoughts about that?
Well, we're looking at the question of whether or not that makes sense. As you know, the legislature did set out how this process was to work. We do work within the bounds of what we're required to do by the legislature. There would need to be system changes at the carriers. There would need to be changes on our end. We would most importantly have to figure out just exactly how people would come over if their income changed and they became eligible for a subsidy and wanted to get that subsidy rather than go without coverage. People do lose their jobs, lose their businesses, have their economic circumstances change, and those subsidies cannot be delivered through the carrier system. So we'll look at it. It isn't as simple as throwing a switch and saying, oh, yeah, they're open for business the next day. It took a tremendous amount of effort on the part of the carriers, and they did a tremendously good job getting ready for taking small businesses on directly. It was a lot of work. It was a lot of expense, and they did a marvelous job of it. So we'll have that conversation, but we've got to make sure it's feasible, frankly.
Because Representative Comline and Sherman said, This might actually help solve part of your problem, take these people out of the system, and that'll allow you time to concentrate on those folks who are actually getting subsidies.
Yeah, but if I have to take time to focus on finding the people who are in that change of circumstance queue that we're going to take out rather than marching through this whole group of people in the month of August, I'm going to put a delay on other people who are in that same queue. I understand the intent. We're looking at it, but it nothing is simple in this business.
Well, how about for the open enrollment period in November, letting individuals do it then?
Again, we're looking at that. There's also a practice available that CMS has approved to allow the carriers and others to have access into the system, and I can't remember the term of art at this moment, but we are looking at how to give the carriers better access so that when a Vermonter calls either Vermont Health Connect or the carrier, they're able to get a higher level of customer service from the carrier regardless of whether or not they're direct enrolled or enrolled through Vermont Health Connect. So we're looking at this question of whether or not they'd be able to become marketplace facilitated enrollers is the CMS term of art released a couple of weeks ago, and how we can improve that process.
Trinco, what do you think about this? Would direct enrollment for those individuals who are not going to be getting subsidies, would that be helpful?
Well, it might be, and I'm glad that the state is thinking about that. But as Lawrence says, nothing is simple in this business. So, the system has to be fixed for the people that need to get or want the subsidies. And so if it's fixed for them, it will be fixed for everybody. And that's what I'm hoping is going to happen.
Trinca Kerr, Director of the Office of the Healthcare Advocate, many thanks for being on the program today.
Thank you. You're welcome.
And we're going to continue our program with Lawrence Miller in just a moment. This is Vermont Edition on VPR. Welcome back to Vermont Edition. I'm Bob Kinzel. We're talking about healthcare today in Vermont Health Connect. Lawrence Miller, who is the chief of healthcare reform for the Shumlin administration, is here. Our phone number is 1-800-639-2211 if you've got a question or a comment about Vermont Health Connect. So let's talk to Ellen in Cabot. Hi, Ellen. Welcome to the program.
Hi. Yes, I wanted to ask your guests to compare the complexity of what we're trying to do right now with supposing we had gone directly into single payer. Thank you.
Sure. Vastly simpler to do single payer. No eligibility determinations, no enrollment to be done. You're a Vermont resident, you're covered. Simply hiring a claims payment processor to take care of everybody and adjusting the revenue system in something we already manage every day. So part of the reason that we're going down this path is that today's system is incredibly complex, not particularly fair, not particularly transparent.
You don't think you'd have some of the same computer and technical problems in single payer that you've experienced with this system?
This is a much more complex system than one would need for a single-payer system, for a universal coverage system that simply says, if you're a Vermont resident, you're covered. You have the benefit package. If you want to go out and buy some supplemental, maybe that's available, but that's a separate system, not necessarily our system. It's, the whole objective of universal coverage is to have a simple, fair, and equitable system. And that's really not the way the world is set up today.
You know, there's some very strong supporters of single payer over at the legislature who think that the bad experience of Vermont Health Connect has really undermined support at the State House for single payer. Do you agree?
Do I agree that it's undermined support? Yes. I think given people's perspective today, they're clearly intimidated. I think we have to in January, be prepared to lay out a clear operations plan that demonstrates why the statement I just made about it being simpler and lower risk is true.
And do you think you're going to be able to make that argument?
Yes.
How will it work in terms of financing? Because right now people pay about $2 billion with their different health insurance premiums, understanding that that money is going to have to be shifted over to revenue and will replace the money that's being spent on premiums. Do you think you can put a system in place that won't be harmful to the state's business community?
I do. But right now that's at the level of a hunch based on macroeconomics. And as you know, we've retained analysts to go through and do a good microeconomic simulation, multiple iterations to really understand the impact of the various choices that the legislature will have in pursuing a financing strategy.
Let's talk to Bruce in Newberry. Hi, Bruce. Welcome to the program.
Hey, hi. Hi, Lawrence.
Hi, Bruce.
My comment may be redundant, but I first of all, I want to say I want to thank the good folks at the Exchange. They're doing important, thankless work, and I know some of them. They're terrific people. And you're pulling a lot of people up out of sickness and despair, and I really appreciate that. But, like the last caller, the device you're using is like Rube Goldberg machine. It's all complicated, and it's heavy with insurance companies. So I'm sitting here in my Newberry house. I'm looking at this pulley my kids gave me. It's tried and true. This thing works, and even I can understand it, like Medicare and the health systems of the rest of the developed world. So my question was, Lawrence, can you turn Rube Goldberg into my pulley?
Well, the parts of this system that we'll be able to turn off when we switch over to universal care will simply make it a lot easier for all involved.
You were talking about the simplicity of single payer, but even under a single payer system, it's not like all of everybody's health care costs are going to be covered.
That's right.
Legislature is talking about something that's comparable to the silver policy on the health care exchange, where individuals would be responsible for perhaps 30% of their expenses. So, I mean, we're going to still have a system where people are going to go to the doctor. They're still going to have deductibles. They're still going to have out-of-pocket costs. That doesn't sound so simple.
Well, they'll have different parts of copay structures, but compared to today, we're envisioning something dramatically simpler. Right now, there's multiple different rate cards that providers have to deal with. All of the carriers, Medicaid, Medicare, all have different reimbursement structures, and to allow them to go, not only do they have different reimbursement structures, they've got different claim codes for everything. To go to a single unified claim code system, and then to go even further, some of the payment reform discussions are looking at how to move to population-based payments, capitated payments, so you're not just locked into this fee-for-service world that we've got. Of course, we'll need fee-for-service for people who are coming from out of state, visitors, for certain procedures and populations, but to be able to move to a capitated payment structure that better reflects the types of cost structures that hospitals and providers experience. I mean, right now, we've got these basically fixed-cost institutions, and we pay them on a variable basis with no fundamental connection to cost in a useful way. And it's different for every provider and every procedure and different procedures at different providers. It's nuts. So that whole provider reimbursement, provider payment side can be dramatically simpler as well. And what we've got to do in this is at the same time make Vermont just a great place to practice medicine. And I think if we take all of that bureaucratic stuff out of the practice of medicine, docs are going to be a lot happier to be practicing here than anywhere else.
Let's talk to John, calling from Johnson. Hi, John. What's on your mind today?
Hey, thanks for taking my call. I appreciate it. Good topic. What's on my mind is just a simple issue relative to billing. I appreciate having health care, but I've made 9 payments so far, and only one has been credited to my account. I don't think that's relative to the computer system. I just think that's simple accounting problems. Very frustrating. I'm worried about getting my health care canceled because I've sent letters and emails and called multiple times. You guys just don't seem to be able to process my money properly.
Could you? My email is lawrence.miller. That's Lawrence with a W. lawrence.miller@state.vt.us. And I'm happy to follow up with one of the specialists to make sure that we understand and you get a correct answer as to what's wrong with on a recurring basis with your account. That's not acceptable.
And we can have information at the VPR website that you give us for people who are listening, who have concerns, and you want to send them to a particular person. We can have that information there as well. Let's turn to Julie in Stowe. Hi, Julie. Welcome to the program.
Thank you. I moved here in June from out of state where I had insurance through the company that I worked for. And so I immediately went online here. Apparently what happened is I missed the second question, which asked if you wanted assistance or not. And since I wasn't working, technically I was unemployed. Anyway, I went through the whole process. I signed up for insurance and dental. I got a price. I was okay with it. Went through all the procedures, done deal. Then people around me were saying, you know, you should have at least qualified for some kind of subsidy since you're not working yet. So I called the exchange, and the gentleman said, well, first of all, this is odd. All I see you having here is dental insurance. Well, hold on a second. He comes back and says, okay, I've got you down now for Medicare. And I said, but I don't want Medicare. I was just curious whether or not I could, you know, get some kind of subsidy to assist. I plan on working very soon. I don't want to be a burden on the system. And he said, oh, you know, now that we've gone back this way, you don't go back the other way or it's going to be totally screwed up and you'll get nothing. And now it's been a month and a half later and I've still got no paperwork. I don't even know where I stand in this process. But I thought it was odd that I didn't want Medicare. I was willing to pay. And they say that I can't. So I think that's an unfortunate flaw in the system for someone who wants to pay and isn't allowed to.
So the program we would be talking about would be Medicaid specifically, Medicare being the program for those over 65. That's the federal program, and we're the state administrator of Medicaid. And that's a good question. I don't know what the rules engine does, and I will have to go back and find out, because I thought that the system provided you with a choice once you selected that you want assistance. I understand your first time through the system, you did not check that. I'm looking for financial assistance, but I believe the way the design's set up is that if you do, it should then give you what you are eligible for, all of what you were eligible for, which would include Medicaid and would also include a subsidized qualified health insurance product. So I will have to find that out, and my email will be on the VPR website. My email and my phone number are in the employee directory for the state online.
We got this email from Bill, who wrote, Mr. Miller seems to be unable to accept that there are many serious troubles. He seems sincere, but also seems frightened and uncertain. He repeats the complexity of the issue without seeming to be very confident as to his group's ability to get their heads around the complexities. Bill would like to know, are you confident that these problems can be solved, or do you have some concerns?
So first of all, I think I've been pretty clear that I accept the nature of the problems, and I've been pretty candid about what I feel those problems to be. I'm on the record pretty firmly on that. I do not have, based on my experience with the exchange, I do not have a near-term confidence that these are going to be fixed in the next few weeks. I have confidence that these are a limited range of problems that need to be addressed, and I have recognized that we need additional support. We went in and hired Optum, went in and appointed a new director of operations to run the operating side of Vermont Health Connect. We've identified the problems, and we're taking the steps to improve them.
We'll certainly be following the development of these issues in the coming weeks and months. Lawrence Miller, many thanks for being on the program today, and we'll have some information for folks at our website. If they have concerns and they need to get a hold of you, they'll be able to do that.
Thank you, Bob.
That's going to do it for Vermont Edition today. On Monday, we'll be looking at the issue of depression. It can be a crippling mental health condition that is mysterious, stigmatized, and often dealt with in silence. We'll talk about the experience of depression from a firsthand perspective, and we'll learn how treatment can make a difference. Share your thoughts on depression. Write to vermontedition@vpr.net and then join us Monday on Vermont Edition. Our producers are Patty Daniels, Rick Sangari, and Sage Van Wing. We have production assistance from Catherine Hayes. Neil Charnoff directed the show, and our executive producer is John Van Hoosen. I'm Bob Kinzel. Have a great weekend.